The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I think it's been completely demolished. I think the reason we're here is because those pilots, those B-2 pilots, did an unbelievable job. Those pilots hit their targets. Those targets were obliterated. Iran will never rebuild its nuclear. From there? Absolutely not. That place is under rock. That place is demolished. That place is gone. You take a look at the pinpricks and you see that place is gone.
It was obliteration.
How long do you think that the Iranian nuclear program has been put back by these strikes? Years or totally literal?
I think it's basically decades, because I don't think they'll ever do it again. I just don't think they're going to. And we're actually getting along with them very well right now. But had we not succeeded with that hit ended the war. That hit ended the war.
With regard to the Iranians, the president has said unequivocally that he wants to see, and he's hopeful for, a comprehensive peace agreement that goes beyond even the ceasefire. We're already talking to each other, not just directly, but also through interlocutors. I think that the conversations are promising. We're hopeful that we can have a long-term peace agreement that resurrects Iran, that brings it into the League of Nations, that creates long-term prosperity for Iran.
Do you think that the Iran regime hid some of the enriched uranium before the strikes?
No.
I mean, if they were to have
moved, they
didn't move anything. How will you know if he tries to start things up again? Because Iran just said that they are halting cooperation with the UN nuclear watchdog.
The last thing they're going to be doing right now, for a period of time at least, is nuclear. They've had it. They've been trying it for 25 years. The last thing they're going to do is nuclear.
So, I mean, you've got a regime that's been building ballistic missiles, building or trying to build a nuclear weapon. Why should we think that they're actually going to give up on this?
Well, they might not give up, but they're going to give up on it while they're exhausted. They are exhausted.
What might make you have the desire to do another strike on Iran?
Another what?
Another strike on Iran.
I hope we're not going to have to do that. I can't imagine wanting to do that. I can't imagine them wanting to do it. They want to meet. They want to meet. They want to work something out.
Can you say
they're different. They're very different now than they were 2 weeks ago. I'd like to see Iran build itself back up in a peaceful manner and not going around saying death to America, death to the USA, death to Israel, as they were doing. You know, they were the bully of the Middle East, and now they're not the bully anymore.
How did the U.S. and Israel launch a preemptive strike against Iran? Well, they used a devastating tactic called time on target. With two aircraft carriers and a fleet of destroyers, they calculated the exact math so Israeli jets and U.S. cruise missiles hit their marks at the exact same second. Israel's main goal is assassinating Khamenei and the top leadership, while the U.S. pounded military targets and other high-value industry. But why did Iranian air defenses fail to activate? Because the U.S. fights with a different kind of technology, using electronic warfare from space, sea, and air. They completely blinded the Iranian radar just as destroyers launched a swarm of cruise missiles to wipe out the anti-air systems. But wait, the war is still not over. Iran still has thousands of ballistic missiles and drones, so they hit American and Middle East allied bases, and right now, almost everyone is an open target.
But I know this, they have 10,000, roughly, kilograms of fissionable material. That's broken up into roughly 460 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium, another 1,000 kilograms of 20% enriched uranium, and the balance is at 3.67. They manufacture their own centrifuges to enrich this material. So there's almost no stopping them. They have an endless supply of it. The 60% material, Sean, can be brought to 90%, that's weapons grade, in roughly 1 week, maybe 10 days at the outside. The 20% can be brought to weapons grade inside of 3 to 4 weeks. And let me say this, because I forgot this small little detail. In that first meeting,
both the Iranian negotiators said to us directly, with, you know, no shame, that they controlled 460 kilograms of 60%, and they're aware that that could make 11 nuclear bombs, and that was the beginning of their negotiating stance. So they were proud of it. They were proud that they had evaded all sorts of oversight protocols to get to a place where they could deliver 11 nuclear bombs.
But I'm told by a senior Israeli official that the Israelis just struck the Supreme Council gathering where the Iranians were meeting to choose a new supreme leader. This is a significant development and, again, speaks to the Israeli intelligence about this war. They just targeted the meeting in Tehran, where what's left of the leadership was gathering to choose a new supreme leader.
So many storylines, as we covered on the show yesterday, the first half of that cold open. That's from 8 months ago when everything was demolished. Everything was obliterated. The nuclear weapons program, it was set back decades, as you heard President Trump say, decades. And then you fast forward 8 months. And, well, I mean, they were this close to 11 nukes. We had to strike. We had no choice. There you see Steve Witkoff. I mean, he's singing a very different tune than what they were singing a few months back when Iran's exhausted. They're different than they were a few weeks previous to the strike last summer. They're different. They want to negotiate. They want to make peace. And all of that talk of peace, of course, it went up in flames. And now the Board of War is hard at work. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots to get to on the program to update you on the Iran story and just the widening conflict, the U.S. evacuating two of its embassies. One of, I forget the nation, one of them went up in flames. Nobody was in the embassy, thankfully. But then the State Department, they've sent out warnings to Americans in 14 countries. You better leave because Iran's just, they're shooting at everybody. Everybody's being drawn into this. And as I say, there's not just a lot of storylines, there's a lot of biblical threads running through this as well. You're seeing the Psalm 83 Alliance come into play. You're seeing the continent of Europe dragged into this because of Cyprus and other factors as well. You're seeing you're seeing America's reliance on technology. This is really push button warfare. It's like a video game almost. And what does it say in Ezekiel 7 and verse 14? There's coming a time when the call for battle is not answered. No one goes out to battle, even when the alarms are sounding, because they can't. Because there's been a massive cyber attack. I mean, for the U.S., on the one hand, it's unbelievably sophisticated that the air defense systems in Iran were just basically taken out beforehand. It was like, you know, fishing in a barrel, basically. For those fighters, whether from Israel or the United States, just went in there without any interruption whatsoever. Devastating strikes over the weekend, and of course it continues through to today. The New York Times says President Trump, who campaigned on ending American wars, is now extending the time frame for his war in Iran. He said the U.S. had a virtually unlimited supply of certain powerful weapons. Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, he says that the worst is yet to come for Iran. They're going to get hit harder. So says the Secretary. It says the U.S. military is sending more troops and fighter jets, and Trump declined to rule out putting boots on the ground. Pete Hegseth, though, insisted that the conflict would not drag out. This is not Iraq. This is not endless. And Prime Minister Netanyahu, he said the same thing last night on Fox News. This is not going to go on forever. We're just talking about 4 or 5 weeks here. So there's the U.S. basically broadcasting the time limit. And Iran, of course, sitting back, hunkering down, thinking, well, we just got to wait this out, as we've done for 47 years. Just wait it out. We'll look back on some of that history, even going back to the hostage crisis before President Reagan came into office. I mean, Iran, for their part, they've been at war with the United States for 47 years. And here the United States retaliates. The United States bombs them. And we say, listen, it's only going to be for a month at the most. 4 or 5 weeks. And that's pretty much it. This is from the Jerusalem Post. Just to, again, make the point about the widening conflict. According to the IDF, Hezbollah could fall apart without Iranian training and guidance, which they will have less of now that Iran's regime is fighting for its survival. Israel invaded Lebanon last night. So the conflict widens. Now, again, for its part, Israel is saying, listen, it's not going to be a huge invasion, just a little bit in the south, and that's it. What is it about Israelite nations that want to tell the whole world it's going to be very limited? We're definitely not going to go after, you know, civilians. It's going to be very strategic. Meanwhile, the enemies, well, they're just randomly firing missiles in every direction, hoping to hit civilians. Listen to Steve Witkoff, just to go back to what he said last night on Fox News. You saw a bit of it in the cold open. He's like, hey, they were that close to building 11 nukes, so we had no choice. He's talking about the negotiations in recent weeks with Iran. Clip two.
Jared and I opened up with the Iranian negotiators telling us they had the inalienable right to enrich all their nuclear fuel that they possessed. That's how they opened up. We, of course, responded that the president feels we have the inalienable right to stop you dead in your tracks. They then went on to say that beyond the inalienable right to enrich, that was going to be their starting point. And Jared and I just sort of looked at ourselves flummoxed and said, well, we're really in for it now.
President Trump gave you the 47-year history yesterday in those clips I played for you. Look at what they've done. Look at their history. Look at the hostage crisis. Look at the bombing of those U.S. Servicemen, their barracks in Lebanon. What was that, 1982, 83? Of course, Iran's support for its proxies in Lebanon, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis. That's gone on for decades. And then what about America's war against terrorism in Iraq? And all the, I mean, you had soldiers that were pleading with U.S. leadership, saying that a lot of these deaths in Iraq are because of Iranian IEDs. As if the U.S. needed an excuse to defend itself, to launch a counteroffensive. In a lot, as I'll show you today, in so many ways, the push-button warfare is impressive. And as I said yesterday, President Trump deserves credit for finally doing something that every other U.S. president since the early 1980s refused to do. Look at what happened even with President Reagan. Many see him as a strong president. They bomb the U.S. barracks, and then what happens? The U.S. withdraws, just like it did many years later in Afghanistan. Get out. If you can't win it, if it turns into a quagmire, just get out. I said yesterday on the show, I mean, that Asia Times article saying how easy it is to start a war, particularly when you have all of this technological firepower and you can just launch this invasion from the sky. But what's much more difficult is extracting yourself from the quagmire. So many of America's enemies, they know. They take the long view, and they know if they can just hunker down and wait it out, they'll win. listen to this. This is with Vice President J.D. Vance on with Jesse Waters last night, clip three.
Do you and the president care who runs the country now? Or you just kind of sit back and kind of shape it from the sea and the air?
Well, I guess, Jesse, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, we would love it if somebody came to power in Iran who was willing to work with the United States, who was willing to show some respect to the United States, and again, most importantly, made that long-term commitment that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. But ultimately, Jesse, whatever happens with the regime in one form or another, it's incidental to the president's primary objective here, which is to make sure the Iranian terrorist regime does not build a nuclear bomb.
And so really, as we discussed with the news gatherers this morning, I mean, you hear, well, they can't have a nuclear bomb. We've also heard, well, there needs to be regime change. But then there's the Jeroboam people saying, you know, the Iranian people need to do it. And right now, the streets in Iran are quiet. So it's not happening, at least not yet. Even though there are a few celebrating on social media that Khamenei's dead and all that. But my point is that, you know, there's different reasons put for, and really when you step back and look at the bigger picture of 47 years, I mean, U.S. leadership has been all over the map. As I said yesterday, the dear leader was sending pallets of cash to the mullahs. Here's money to fund your terrorism operations. And President Trump hasn't done that. He's shown some strength. I mean, he's shown that he has a certain amount of pride in America's power. But when you read through those prophecies in Leviticus 26, I mean, really, and you look at the bigger picture, what you're seeing here is a broken will on the part of America. I mean, America puts almost $1 trillion toward its military. President Trump has said it wants to bump it up to $1.5 trillion, I should say. And that $1 trillion a year, by the way, that's what we're paying toward interest on our debt. America's broken. And anytime something like this happens, you see how broken it is, whether you look at it financially or economically or even militarily. Here we have far and away the highest budget figure for military spending. And even though, as I said yesterday, you know, Iran is definitely not Iraq or Afghanistan, still, where has this been for 47 years after the hostages, after bombing U.S. Marines, after all the Iranian-made IEDs? Where has been America's strength? Where has been the pride in its power? And then this time, finally, what do we get? 4 or 5 weeks. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58. I mean, Paul's addressing this to the brethren, but it applies to leadership as well. It says, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. There's a verse, by the way, in Leviticus 26, where it says America's or Israel's strength would be spent in vain. Is America's labor in Iran right now, will it be in vain? Well, look at the history. Look at the track record. Are we steadfast? Are we unmovable? I mean, even Herbert Armstrong used to talk about leadership, you know, praising leaders that would go forward and explain the objective. Here's why this enemy is coming after us and we need to go in this direction. You don't really see a lot of that. As I say, you get a lot of different reasons in the 15-second sound bites as to what the objective is here. Is it to disable the nuke program? Because we were told last summer that was taken care of, that was set back for decades. Is it regime change? Well, how can you guarantee that? And is the effort just 4 or 5 weeks? Well, what if you don't accomplish all the objectives in 4 or 5 weeks? What then? Does the Iranian regime survive? Does taking out Khamenei, does that mean it's over and done with for the Islamic Republic? Or were they prepared for something like this? Ephesians 4:14, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine. Just tossed to and fro. There's a verse in James 1 that says a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. Again, you have to give President Trump some credit for at least doing something after 47 years. But at the same time, if at one moment everything is great, Iran is exhausted, they're different, they have a different mindset, they want to make peace, they want to do a deal. If that was 2 seconds ago, and now it's like, well, we had no choice. They had 11 nukes they were going to fire at us. That, to me, that suggests there's some, you know, some toss to and fro thinking. As I said yesterday, I mean, the history is the history. The track record's there, for not just for Iran, but for Hamas, for Hezbollah, for the Houthis. It's there for Germany, too, as I said on the show yesterday. Listen to Bibi Netanyahu. He was like Witkoff. He was on with Hannity last night as well. Clip 4.
The reason that we had to act now is because they were, after we hit their nuclear sites and their ballistic missiles program, you'd think they learned a lesson, but they didn't, because they're unreformable. They're totally fanatic about this, about the goal of destroying America. So they started building new sites, new places, underground bunkers that would make their ballistic missile program and their atomic bomb program immune within months. If no action was taken now, no action could be taken in the future.
Again, I know I've made the point, but you go back to last summer and what we were told. I mean, to their credit, some of those Fox commentators, you saw it in the cold open, they didn't seem like they were sold on the fact that Iran was done with their weapons building programs. Maria Bartiromo and all the others. How can we just take their word for it? Listen, they're exhausted. They've been hit hard. Everything's changed. Their attitude's different. They want to make a deal. Turns out they didn't want any of that. Bibi, of course, he's happy to have U.S. support for this go-round. But how much longer before the U.S. twists his arm and says, all right, that's enough. We've accomplished everything that we've needed to accomplish. The weapons program demolished. The nuke facilities obliterated. Iran, the leadership, they're exhausted. They want peace. They want to make a deal. When are we going to hear those sound bites? Well, when we hear them, you can be sure we'll play them for you on this show. One more from Bibi last night, clip 5.
There's never been a president like Donald J. Trump. His resoluteness, his decisiveness, his clarity of thinking, the way he gets things, gets right to the crux of things. It cuts through all the fluff, cuts through the chase, gets down to the main point, and he gets down to the main action that needs to be taken. And I think for Israel, and I think for the countries of the free world, let me tell you, I think for the world, we're very lucky to have him as the leader of the free world, and in fact, the leader of the world. He's brought America back to being the leader of the world, and it makes a huge difference.
Well, he's certainly stronger than so many of his predecessors. You do wonder, you know, he was on the talk show circuit back in the 80s, back in the 90s. You do wonder if he had political aspirations back then. You know, what the presidency would have been like. It's a moot point, I guess. But he has shown some resoluteness and some decisiveness. He's also been very unpredictable. And he's also said one thing, you know, on one occasion, and then something very different a few months later, as you saw from the cold open. Listen, speaking of him making the rounds, back in the day, here's a much younger version of President Trump in 1980, and he's responding to Iran, kidnapping those Americans, taking them hostage in Tehran, clip 7.
When you get the respect of the other countries, then the other countries tend to do a little bit as you do. and you can create the right attitudes. The Iranian situation is a case in point. That they hold our hostages is just absolutely and totally ridiculous. That this country sits back and allows a country such as Iran to hold our hostages, to my way of thinking, is a horror. And I don't think they'd do it with other countries. I honestly don't think they'd do it with other countries.
Obviously, you're advocating that we should have gone in there with troops, et cetera, and brought our boys out.
I absolutely feel that, yes. I don't think there's any question, and there's no question in my mind. I think right now would be an oil-rich nation, and I believe that we should have done it, and I'm very disappointed that we didn't do it. And I don't think anybody would have held us in abeyance. I don't think anybody would have been angry with us. And we had every right to do it at the time. I think we've lost the opportunity.
We had every right to do it at the time. We had every right to do it in the early 80s. We had every right to do it in the early 2000s when all those IEDs were blowing up American soldiers. Leviticus 26 and verse 3. If you look at the big picture, what you see is a sickness, a weakness. Verse 3, it says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, here's where the promises made to Abraham become conditional on Israel's obedience. And as you know, if you've read U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, we have this here on the table. This is the master key to unlocking a third of your Bible to your understanding. The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Who are we? Most people don't know that we're in time Israelites. That we're the tribe of Manasseh. That the UK is the tribe of Ephraim. That little Israel in the Middle East is the tribe of Judah. You can prove this. Whether you're looking into Leviticus or Deuteronomy or the Old Testament prophets, the minor prophets. Verse 7, as I say, it's conditional. It says here, and you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword, and 5 of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. You're going to be given victories. I mean, the push early on, and you saw it in Iraq. You saw it in Afghanistan. Push-button warfare. I mean, it does have a shock and awe kind of impact initially. But then when you look at the long game, and again, we have Iraq to look at as a case study. We've got Afghanistan to look at. We've got Lebanon to look at from the 1980s. We've got Iran to look at from 2025, 8 months ago. So how will this play out? This time, does the shock and awe, you know, of push-button warfare, does that mean there's just an overwhelming victory? We were told it was an overwhelming victory last summer. There's only so far that you can take a war effort when it's all done by buttons. Buttons. America has no appetite for boots on the ground, for another. You're already hearing people, Democrats and Republicans alike, just screaming, this is another Iraq. You're actually considering boots on the ground? I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe so. But, I mean, there's already been 6, 7, 8 casualties for America, I mean. How much longer will the American people stand for it? As I said yesterday, President Trump, he's already going against public opinion. And then you've got the lunatic wing of the MAGA movement that hates Jews so much. I was listening to John Brennan. I don't have the clip. I didn't bring it with me. He's on MSNBC last night, or MS Now, whatever it's called. He sounds exactly like Tucker. Exactly. There's no difference. Yeah, we're just doing Israel's bidding. Israel, Saudi Arabia, I mean, they twisted our arm. President Trump is just a stooge of Bibi. There's a lot of people in the MAGA movement saying exactly that. Military victories in Deuteronomy the parallel account, Deuteronomy 28, verse 7, the Lord shall cause your enemies that rise up against you to be smitten before your face, and they shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. Overwhelming victories. If you obey, if you keep the Sabbaths of God, if you walk in God's statutes, if you observe his commandments. Notice verse 17 further down. Well, verse 14 says, but if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments. Verse 16 says, I also will do this to you. I will even appoint over you terror. You're going to be the victim of terrorist attacks, just like America was on 9/11. And then Israel, more recently, October 7, Israel's 9/11 times 40. Terror attacks. Verse 17, I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies. They that hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when none pursue you. In verse 19, again, Mr. Armstrong spends a lot of time on this in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. It says, and I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass, and your strength, it says, shall be spent in vain. All of that military might, soon to be $1.5 trillion in military spending. And for what? 4 or 5 weeks of bombing Iran and then saying, well, we did everything we needed to do. This was a total victory. They're obliterated. They're exhausted. Is that what we're looking forward to in 4 or 5 weeks? That message, those narratives, those talking points? Because it seems like we've heard that before. You listened to Donald Trump in 1980. Those of us old enough to remember, you know, how that hostage crisis went on for over a year. And then the debacle in the desert as Jimmy Carter tried to send out a rescue. I understand the surveillance operations weren't quite as sophisticated 47 years ago, but still, I mean, this was the United States of America. And we couldn't even go in there and rescue our own hostages. And this little nation, really, that had just come through its revolution, they didn't have the firepower that they have today either. And yet there was America, just you know, pleading with Iran, the mullahs, the radical Islamist republic, please give us our hostages back. And you heard Donald Trump saying, you know, we lost our opening. The whole world would have sided with us. These were terrorists. I mean, this is back at a time when, you know, people's view of the world was more black and white. Today, it's gray. Everything's gray. And of course, there's the built-in hostility toward Israelite nations and Jews in particular. What an opportunity. And of course, Ronald Reagan comes into office and Iran releases the hostages straight away. It says a lot about strength of leadership, U.S. leadership. And it also says, it says a lot about what happens when God takes away strong leadership, bold leadership, decisive, resolute leadership. On the whole, I mean, that's gone. You may remember the movie from 2011. I mean, this is 15 years ago now. Uranium, you know, it's about Iran and its nuclear program. And what's interesting about this trailer, we won't show clips of the movie for you, but the trailer brings it out well enough, is you see Republicans, Democrats alike, I mean, they said in front of the camera back then, we're at war with Iran. They're killing our soldiers. They're blowing up our soldiers. As I say, this is from 2011, clip 9.
Iranians clashed, shouting death to the dictator.
You have thousands of people rounded up, some because they demonstrate, some because they blog.
The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students.
You had attacks in Beirut, Buenos Aires, Khobar Towers, Nairobi, and Dar es Salaam.
Iran has not been very subtle about confronting us in Iraq.
The Iranians are helping train Taliban fighters inside Iran.
Iran is the leading sponsor and supporter of terrorism around the world.
When they provide training and equipment to people fighting us, you'd have to say that they are at war with us.
Nuclear experts have found unexplained traces of plutonium and highly enriched uranium.
Islamic Republic of Iran will not stop its enrichment activities.
The Iranian government has failed to live up to its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Once the Iranian missiles are up and running on launching pads in Lebanon, they can reach Western targets.
When Mahmoud Ahmadinejad talks about a world without America not only being desirable but achievable, he could mean probably one thing.
People discount it because it's so hideous.
Payam inqilab, payam jahanist, hame qullehay jahan ro fath khahad kard.
Democracy inside Iran is a question now of international security.
Ho-hum, another riveting documentary. That was probably in the news for, what, 4 or 5 weeks? About as long as this this round of war with Iran will go on. And then you move on. Yeah, Democrats, we're at war with Iran. About half the U.S. casualties in Iraq were because of Iran's weapons. Iranian-made weapons. Or weapons that came through Iran, whether from China or Russia or wherever. They've been killing Americans and Jews for decades. And what you see right there, because of that, or in that trailer, is weakness. American weakness. You see Leviticus 26. You see Deuteronomy 28. You see Isaiah 3. I mean, what's the point of being a superpower with all of this military hardware and equipment, this sophisticated machinery, this push-button technology? What's the point if you can't impose your will? Even if they have 92 million people, even if they have the ballistic missiles, even if they have the uranium enrichment program, what is the point of being the lone superpower on Earth with $1.5 trillion in annual spending on the military, all of this awesome power? And really what this latest round with Iran shows, again, is just how weak we are, how weak leadership has been in the United States. And the UK, I mean, look at the UK. President Trump came out yesterday and said, yeah, Europe's showing more support for us than the UK. Ephraim is sick. And the reason for this sickness is because of sin. America calls this effort epic fury. Where's the epic fury when it comes to the Epstein files or when it comes to the corruption at the FBI? I mean, Dan Bongino, he was at the FBI, number two man. And now he's back into podcasting. And oh, I mean, as a podcaster, he sounds strong. Yeah, there were two FBIs. There was the one half there to uphold law and order, and the other half is deep state. The other half has been weaponized against political opponents. Well, okay, you were there. You were in the FBI. What did you do about it? Well, there's only so much you can do. You know, the bureaucracy and all those things. So he's fed up. He leaves the FBI. He goes off to podcasting where he can make 5 or 10 times more money. And then, I mean, he sounds strong. Strong leadership, right? Weakness. A weak, compromised FBI. And then all of these pedophiles, this international drug and sex trafficking ring, and no one's held to account. The Epstein files now, I mean, they're just pushed into the dustbin of history. And President Trump even went so far as to call it a hoax. That's a hoax. That deserves no attention whatsoever. But now, I mean, America's angry. America's righteously indignant. America's unleashed epic fury on the mullahs. No epic fury on those who have abused little children or ruined their families, or have basically turned against their own nation in the case of some, you know, traitors, giving away secrets, insider trading, all of it. But coming back to war, you look at 2011, and that's 15 years ago, and do you think Americans are more eager to get into a foreign war or less, given all that's happened over the last couple, three decades in Iraq, in Afghanistan? There was a Reuters poll after the strikes on Saturday that found 3 in 4 Americans disapprove of having killed Khamenei. 75%. Don't get in there. Don't ruffle the feathers. Don't destabilize the region. Just let the madman continue. Even if he kills U.S. soldiers, even if he takes them hostage, even if he bombs, you know, barracks, even if he kills Jews, even if he sponsors, you know, October 7, even if he gives safe harbor to 9/11 perpetrators, just let him stay. Let him stay. And that's 75% of America. Republicans, too. So many of them say that Trump is too willing to use force. We don't like it. America first. Just let the world explode. Axios says here, MAGA's ascendant America First wing erupted after Secretary of State Marco Rubio effectively blamed Israel for drawing the U.S. into war with Iran. Rubio's remarks were widely interpreted as making the U.S. look subordinate to Israel's interests, and they inflamed already angry MAGA elites who had spent the day railing against President Trump's decision to go to war. On their podcasts and social media, frustrated pro-Trump influencers argued the president had become beholden to the military hawks and neocons he explicitly ran against. So, Iran, decimated as the top tier of their leadership may be, what's left of it there, I mean, they know. They know from recent history. They know from the past 47 years. If you just wait out Donald Trump's willpower, then you win. Hamas understood this after October 7. Look, if we've got to wait it out for 2 years, just let it go, and then we'll get the international community behind us. We'll certainly get the international media behind us, and we'll survive. Even as Jared talks about this vacation paradise in Gaza. Wait it out, and you'll survive. Now, all of that said, I mean, these are some pretty... these are some pretty earth-shaking developments when you see what, you know, America has been doing, what Israel has been engaged in since October 7. But just coming back to the epic fury and where it should be aimed, this is from The Spectator. When will Kash Patel unleash epic fury on the FBI? I mean, I was reading one of our students' papers the other day about Satan the devil. And the same being, you know, that was behind October 7, that massacre, the same mind was also behind the massacre that happened inside spiritual Israel, the church. So many casualties. A great rebellion, a great falling away. You see Satan's fingerprints everywhere in this world. It's his world. He's the God of it. And if you don't confront it, if you don't confront the evil, then it spreads. And that's what's happened in the FBI for the past couple decades. Spectator says the FBI's actions were an unconstitutional breach, and Attorney General Bondi and Director Patel need to hold accountable those involved in this serious wrongdoing. Will they? Accountability has hitherto been in short supply in the U.S. government, just as it has been on the international scene. It took Grassley more than 3 years and the cooperation of several whistleblowers to uncover the details about the FBI's actions. It took Israel and the U.S. many months to uncover the details of the Iranian high command's movement. Operation Epic Fury shows that patience, when backed up by power, can be rewarded. We can hope Pam Bondi and Kash Patel are honing their own version of Epic Fury. Patience backed by power. Where is the power to deal with the corruption in the FBI? To deal with all the evil doing that went on with Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking ring for 2 decades. What came of all of that? Where's the epic fury? Well, there probably won't be any. Coming back to the crisis that's all over the news at the moment. Al Monitor says about 10% of the global container ships caught in the Gulf of Hormuz back up. It says container ships account for roughly 100 of the 750 ships backed up in the Strait of Hormuz following the U.S. and Israeli attacks. About 10% of the container ship global fleet is caught up in this, said one individual at a container shipping industry. So that's no doubt going to have a ripple effect on shipping lanes, on the economy, on costs for goods, and so on. This is from Euro Intelligence. I didn't have time yesterday to get into Europe's response, but they are being reeled into this Middle East conflict following 154 days of eternal peace. Euro Intelligence says here, we Europeans are always hitting natural limits that result from the lack of political union. Europe backs a war it didn't start, won't fight, and can't afford. We keep getting dragged into other people's wars. Sectarian interests dominate pan-European ones. Europe's position over Iran is what it is because the EU gave up on strategic autonomy. We're back on daddy's team. Real strategic autonomy would have required real sacrifices. The EU would have lost half of its members. It would have had to relocate resources from welfare to security. The point of this article is that Europe needs to be a superpower so that we can oppose Iran or oppose Trump on Iran. We've got to be able to go against President Trump, to stand up to him where necessary. The last bit I want to get to is just, again, Europe being reeled into this and what we're seeing now more clearly as this now forming Psalm 83 alliance. Bahrain, this is from American Jewish Committee, Bahrain, Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Arab partners and allies uniformly condemn the attacks on their own countries. I think it's referring to Iran striking their countries, not the U.S. attacks on Iran, but the attacks as a flagrant violation of their national sovereignty and an unacceptable escalation that threatens the security and the stability of the region. I mean, you're seeing this divide. It's now very pronounced between Iran and in this case, the Gulf states. Listen to this from France 24 in English, clip 8.
Yeah, as the day has gone on, it's become increasingly clear that Europe is very likely to get dragged into this conflict. And it all started at midnight overnight when we have this drone attack on the island of Cyprus by Iran. So Iran is now attacking an EU member state. This took place at the British Air Force base there in Cyprus. But what's become clear is that Iran does not see a distinction between the Gulf countries and the European countries who are not actively bombing them. It just sees American allies who, in many cases, are at least using the American bases there in those territories to transfer aircraft to staging posts to attack Iran. So what's become clear to Europe today is that they are going to be a target.
Did you hear this? Iran targeting a NATO, an EU member state, a member of the NATO alliance. And it happens in Cyprus. My father had a program on Cyprus. Cyprus in Prophecy from a little over 10 years ago. I mean, we're seeing the rise of the Psalm 83 alliance. Iran at the moment has been weakened, and there's no doubt about that. But that's going to strengthen Turkey. It's going to strengthen the Gulf states. You're already seeing them come together to denounce what Iran has done. But going back to this Key of David program, as I say, Cyprus in Prophecy. Listen to what my father had to say back in 2015, clip 10.
Cyprus is going to be, we believe, a very significant, or play a very significant role in the near future, and is really going to be probably the little island from which World War III will be triggered. Now, that is according to Bible prophecies. That might seem strange, but then on the other hand, there have been several crusades launched from the little island of Cyprus. And why is this little island so important to Germany, a nation who has started two world wars and now have Cyprus in absolute bondage to their country?
Here again, history informs. I mean, right now with America and Israel leading the way, it's easy to just brush aside, you know, Europe's response, that Euro intelligence article saying, look, we can't just sit here and criticize when we don't have the power or the strength to participate. We don't have the power or the strength to, you know, to push back against Trump. So we need to be a superpower ourselves. And of course, Cyprus is the perfect launching pad right on into the Middle East. And we know once that Psalm 83 alliance is formed and once Germany's leading the way, you've got the perfect launching pad in Cyprus. Listen again to my father from 2015, clip 11.
Well, the European Union now has 27 presidents or kings, and it's going to be reduced to 10 very shortly. But Cyprus is going to be a part of that 10 nations, which comprise, or will comprise, the Holy Roman Empire, and it's almost there for everybody to see already. And of course, the Holy Roman Empire has a very bloody future if you know anything about history. But think about this. The little nation of Cyprus is a powerful watchpost for anybody who has that little island and wants to survey what's going on in the Middle East. And Germany and Rome certainly do want to do that. They want to watch that very closely. This is the beginning, really, of one of the greatest military missions in this end time. And it's something that everybody ought to be taking note of, and we've been talking about it for many years. But not too many people seem interested.
You see why you need the Trumpet, the Trumpet magazine. You see why the Trumpet magazine, by the way, decades of warnings about Germany. That's the latest issue right there. Decades of warnings. He was right. You know about this brochure. He was. We just recently expanded this brochure, adding to all of the prophecies that Herbert Armstrong spent so much time on over the years, on The World Tomorrow and the Plain Truth magazine, the King of the South booklet, my father's signature prophecy from way back in the early 1990s. And then together with, you know, watching Germany, here's Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. So many wonderful books and booklets that you can add to your library. And the best part of it is that everything we offer is without cost or obligation. Make sure you call our operators today and request your free literature. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.